As always, this episode of the Talking Wolves podcast is brought to you by Green King Sport, where football is more than a game. We're now entering the business end of the Premier League season, and as always, you can catch every single televised Wolves game at the Green King Sport venues with over 900 across the UK. You do not need to miss a single minute of the action. Don't forget to download the Green King Sport app for exclusive competitions and discounts whenever there is a game on. So drop a text in your group chat, get your mates down to a Green King Sport venue, and enjoy all of the football before the end of the season.
Hello and welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cooper, and I think we do need to address the elephant in the room. Jordy's coming from another location. Jordy, where are you coming from?
I've literally come into the spare bedroom because...
Oh, I don't know where that was going then.
Yeah, no. It's still my house, spare bedroom. Holiday washing to my left. That's why it's all blurred out. But yeah, thought it made make sense that I'm going into the loft and doing the pilgrimage up there, to be honest. So
I thought you'd be back off your holidays a couple of weeks. What's going on with the washing?
It was a week. Well, to be fair, it was only last 9 days, isn't it? And I was jet lagged as fuck last week, to be fair. And I've been depressed this weekend after the Coventry result. So leave me alone.
Fair enough. who does the washing in the Russell household?
You know what? Actually, the washing's quite shared. I'm sort of in charge of dishwashing and electronics, and then Emma will look after the Nest because she don't trust me with putting the heating on, so she's got that. So we share responsibility.
Yeah. What do you mean by the electrics?
So, like, I'm in charge of anything that to do with TVs, stereos.
What is he going on about? What do you mean? Like, you're in charge.
He has to change the channel.
I mean, in terms of like, yeah, setting up like new, setting up those sort of devices and whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, then, obviously, you're covering the washing, the dish, like, you've got a dish.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But like, who does the cleaning? Is it, do you share it or?
No, Emma will do. I do more of a week clean, and she'll do like a deep clean. If that makes sense, I'll flick the hoover around, but she'll do the proper clean.
Yeah, the proper stuff. I think that's the same as me. But apart from that, George, keeping well despite the result.
Yeah, I feel like I'm finally over my jet lag, which is good. But the missus isn't very well, like I said to you guys. So I've been playing Mother Teresa to her all weekend because she's been bed bound. Bless her. But I've been trying to make sure she's all right and make sure she don't cough or breathe on me at the same time. So I'm, walking around the house with a hazmat suit.
Oh, mate, I've been the cell. Because in the last pod, I had a chest infection. Just couldn't shake it. And then Wednesday night, I went to the driving range, come home after 15 minutes. You know, and you like start aching, you're like, oh, God, lots of coming. And then I had Thursday and Friday off work. Mate, I felt, honestly, like my fever was terrible. Managed to get some antibiotics in the end, starting to feel a little bit better, but didn't get to go to the game either on Saturday. But I don't think we're the worst away on the podcast. Dave, my pink eye's never been that bad. What's going on?
Mate, this is genuinely the best it's been for about 4 days. So I've gone to New Cross today. And I've driven. They literally ask you at the start, are you on your own? I said, yes. They dilated my eye. So I literally, for like 3 hours, couldn't see what was going on my phone. So when they checked it all out, it was okay. And I had to drive home. I couldn't see the screen to pay for the parking. So luckily, my mate's missus works in the department. And I had a voice message. I said, can you come outside and like pay for my parking for me? And I shouldn't have, but I drove home. I didn't have my vision for about 3 hours. But, yeah, ultimately, the rumours aren't true. I didn't get kicked out of the boardroom, Antigua. I didn't drop a dumbbell on my face, and I didn't have a scrap with another fan channel. Basically, I was playing football on Friday night. I was in goal, and as I came down to get the ball, someone was running full pace, and their knee went straight into my face here. So I went down injured. I could hear some dickheads trying to play on behind me. Bearing in mind, I'm in goal and I'm down on the floor. And I felt something come out of my mouth as well. And I thought, I've lost a tooth here. But I think it was a bit of Astro, like, dropping off my face. And then Yeah, even my dogs want to get involved. And then my mates were like, oh my God, yeah. So I had a massive lump at the top of my eyebrow. And that just got worse and worse. By the end of Friday night, it was a black eye. So I was in that, because we always go to the pub after football on Friday. So I was in the pub with a bag of ice on my head. So that was just a lump. Then by the end of the night, it was a black eye. Then woke up Saturday morning and I just couldn't open it at all. So I went to the Wolves game. Obviously, I've said before, I was meant to make an appearance on the TV as well, and that got cancelled. But I was at the Wolves game, and obviously, through this, we know of a lot of people, or people that have helped with the channel. We know of people off Wolves social media. Tell me why on Saturday I saw absolutely every person that you can imagine seeing that I never, ever, ever normally see on a match day. I saw them on Saturday. So, yeah, and yesterday it opened up a bit, and today it's much better. But, yeah, it still doesn't look great, does it?
When you sent me the picture of the lump, I thought you finally found a pair of bollocks, to be honest. It was quite sizable. But were you concussed, or it's an absolute shiner? I'm surprised you've not like broken anything.
No, I was worried that, I think there was a bit of I haven't really had any headaches. I said to you like yesterday I had a little bit of pain, but like it's really sore here. There's a little bit of a lump there still. But it's just really sore there. And like if I touch the eyebrow, it is sore. But as far as I'm aware, like as my siblings are really pushing me to go to the hospital on Saturday. I said, no, I'm busy. I've got things on. We've got to watch Wolves get to the semi-final or so forth. And obviously, yeah, I didn't go. But then yesterday when I saw a bit of blood in the corner of my eye, I thought I'd better get it checked out. But yeah, the doctor said it was absolutely fine. So,
well, speedy recovery, mate. It looks a sore one. Hopefully get some ice on it.
Yeah, it was a lot. To be fair, it was typical as well. The match review, probably our most watched match review of the season. And I don't know if it's because of my eye or just a lot of fans watching it. So I didn't even do a custom thumbnail. I thought, yeah, fuck it, go on. Get a bit of clickbait in there.
Next time we should put the thumbnail as like a quite attractive woman and see what
I want a Billy Fairs that someone's photoshopped a Wolves top on her. You remember years ago, you know Billy Fairs off Towie.
Yeah,
the proper Yadar like Dingles AWE post with some
the one with like the tattoo, he's got like the red Wolverhampton badge.
I found it on my phone yesterday. I was like scrolling through, and the one with the, remember I said it's the new Talking Wolves logo, and it was like a wolf with a massive bicep. I found that as well. I was like, yeah, so yeah, we'll just put that as the thumbnail next time.
Fuzzy hell, mate. Yeah, it looks a sore one, but it probably wasn't the worst thing that happened to you over the weekend, was it really?
No. This was a highlight. So it took my mind off things.
Yeah. Like I said, I weren't at the game. Watched it on the telly. But you know what? Fair play to Coventry, because they battered us. They sounded extremely loud on the telly. I don't know what it was like for you guys there, but they thoroughly deserved to win. We were subpar. We didn't turn up apart from for 5 minutes, and Coventry were the better team and deserved to win, in my opinion, Jordan.
Yeah, they were by far. I mean, people have been asking, are you annoyed, are you pissed off, are you whatever, or how quickly did you get over the result? But honestly, it didn't affect me that for that long afterwards, because we didn't deserve anything from that game, really. We were really poor. Couldn't believe our luck that we went 2-1 up somehow through that game. And, you know, I think there's questions to be asked, really. Tactically, I think we were very naive when we went 2-1 up. And I know that by all means, I've said the same. I've got one of my friends that works a commentary fan. He was absolutely buzzing, like, you know, giving me loads of shit on the weekend. And I said, you know, we had all these injuries and stuff. But honestly, you say we had all these injuries. We still had our, arguably, what you could say is our eight front, like, you know, the eight behind the back three, probably our strongest eight players. I know Dawson wasn't in there, but there was no real excuse, really, for the performance. And it wasn't just the performance. It was to allow Coventry to... They carved us open so many times. And it was just one ball up the top to Ellis Sims. And they were just feeding off Ellis Sims. And it was like 4-on-3, 4-on-4 all of a sudden. So, you know, credit to Coventry. They've done the homework that, you know, they got the tactics spot on. And, yeah, I mean, it's never nice for it to happen to you. But, I mean, what you give to be part of those limbs on a Saturday afternoon, eh? It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I kind of accept Davies that Coventry were the better team. Although, like it pains me to say it, because even with the team we put out, we should beat them based on where we're both at. And I think even Coventry fans would perhaps admit that. But to be 2-1 up in the 96th minute to then complete, people say they're not bottled it. They've completely spewed it. How can you not say they bottled it? You're going to lose the game there. It's just a complete and utter collapse. And I think it's a bit concerning, if I'm honest. Because it depends how you want to read into it, but it's the same weekend as the last two seasons where Leeds come to town and derailed the season. And I'm just a bit scared that it's going to be the same again.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen people say that's pretty much the season over. You know, we still have got European football left to fight for. It's strange that Gary O'Neill was so mysterious in his pre-match press conference as well about the injuries, because ultimately, nothing from last Saturday to Saturday just gone, so the game against Fulham to this Saturday just gone, had changed. He had hinted that Cunha may be a part of things, but then, you know, he said that he doesn't want to give Coventry, you know, an advantage in any shape or form, but they would have prepared for that team. I think, you know, that's the team they would have prepared for. So I think the fact that, you know, we waited till after the game to give any info was strange. But ultimately, we're probably not going to see Neto maybe ever again in a Wolves shirt, you know, playing. Kwang again is still another, 5 or 6 weeks away, I think he said. And Cunha, we may get back. So, you know, for Wolves to get European football now is going to be a major, major stretch. But it was a massive collapse. You know, even to concede a late goal to make it 2-2 is frustrating. It's a bit of a kick between the legs. And you think, right, let's dust ourselves down, get to extra time. And then you probably back Wolves to have that little bit more energy and experience to, you know, go on to win the game in extra time, especially as we had the majority of the momentum up until the equaliser, the 2-2 goal. But the fact that you've not just conceded one goal in the last few minutes, but conceded twice, you know, is ridiculous. And I said it on the review. I think Coventry, if you were a neutral watching that game, you would have said that Coventry were the team in the higher division, because the way they controlled the game, the way they didn't really have any fear going forward, you know, they committed men forward and ultimately gave Wolves a bit of a nightmare. Probably should have scored more goals. Saar made a couple of smart saves. I think Coventry would be disappointed with certain opportunities they had themselves. But we created very, very little. Did not test their goalkeeper, nowhere near enough. And I don't really necessarily want to say players let us down, because I can't pinpoint awful performances from specific players. But just when, and I think Gary O'Neill will be disappointed, because on reflection, I think everybody would have said that lineup is probably about right. I think maybe the only change you could have made was play Ryan Aitnori higher up and maybe start Bueno or Doc. But I think players like, and it's rare, I don't think Lamina was at his best, you know, where he played so well in the second half against Fulham. He was awful on Saturday, I thought. Nathan Fraser, again, just unfortunately didn't work out. So, very, very much one to forget. But when you're a Premier League side and you're 2-1 up with just moments to go, you've got to see out that game. You've got to see it out.
The Nathan Fraser one interests me, because I see, or especially Saturday, you know, you get your divide, don't you? Nathan Fraser's shit. And then you get other people saying you can't blame him. He's only 18. I don't know about you, Jude, but for me, say it as it is, he's an 18-year-old lad who currently isn't good enough to play up top for Wolves. There's no ways about it. He's been chucked in at the deep end, but his performances was awful. But again, who else do you pick? You can say he's had a rubbish performance without completely slating the player, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where I think, again, people are already writing him off. It's just stupid, right, that you're writing off a young lad, second game. Well, second start, should I say, and he was up against it, right. I think the Coventry centre-halves were big, physical, imposing players, and physically he wasn't up to it. And I think he had a poor performance. Like, there's a lot of what I saw. There's endeavour. There's he's trying. Like, you can't knock that.
No.
but there's people are already trying to write him off, like people are trying to write off Fabio Silva at the point when he first got chucked in. It's not his fault. And a big reason why we're not in a semi-final at Wembley this weekend is Fosen. Let's not make any bones about it. The squad depth isn't where it needs to be. There's questions to be asked around whether you think Sasa or Fabio are good enough for Wolves. Why the hell would you let both of them go out of the club and not have any replacements? It's left us completely threadbare at top. And I think if we had Fabio or Sasa starting on the weekend, we'd have won that game, personally.
I think hindsight's a wonderful thing, especially with that, because if we don't have the injuries, we don't even mention it, do we? But
no, of course not.
No, but then Gary O'Neill had said that both of them wouldn't play, which for me is the wrong way of going about it, because you don't know what the future holds for both of them. You might have to welcome them back into your squad. It feels like the bridges are burnt a little bit. But then from a Fosun point of view, you've got Hwang, who is injured for 25% of the season mostly. Every season we've had him, he's carried a knock. Neto, exactly the same. So, you know, there's going to be a risk that they could get injured again. Dave, do you think it's short-sighted? Who, if there is a blame, people say, well, Matt Hobbs is in charge. But if Matt Hobbs is told there's no money to be spent, what does he do? Because I'm sure if there was money there to be spent, Matt Hobbs would be saying, I don't know, actually. Well, we can wait till the summer. He won't be. He'll want to give Gary O'Neill the tools.
He was desperate to get someone in. Ultimately, I don't know whose decision it was to let those two players go. It's a difficult decision. I think everybody knows we should have got another forward in, regardless of what happens. I think in terms of you've got to try and find a balance of keeping your squad harmony happy, but then also keeping a level of squad depth as well. And ultimately, both Sasha and Fabio wanted to play football. Fabio, I don't know how true this is, but sounds like he can be a bit of a nuisance in regards to game time and stuff. And Sasha ultimately wanted to be in the Euro squad. And, you know, both of them had to go out on loan, which is fair enough. But really, I think we all know that Wolves probably shouldn't have sanctioned both deals until they had a striker lined up. And that's just pretty much common knowledge. I think I said the exact same thing last week about Nathan Fraser. Technically, physically and mentally, he's obviously not ready yet. But if he can give 110%, then, you know, that's as best as he can do. And unfortunately, I don't think he did that on Saturday. And not necessarily just that. I don't think the squad trust him. There were times where they wouldn't let him have the ball. And we saw that against Fulham. Even against Fulham, I thought he had an okay game. But players like Sarabia picking up great positions and passes, and Fraser then picking up great positions, and no one wanted to give him the ball or trust him on the ball. So that's an issue in itself, really. But when I was driving home, I thought, who gets the blame for this? Because when you go on social media, someone's got to get the blame. I don't think it'll be O'Neill. I don't think it'll be the squad. It's obviously going to be it will be to an element Fosun because of this. But I don't know. It's very, very hard to find that balance of getting a happy squad and squad depth. Even just now, I know it's completely off topic. Listen to the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer podcast on the overlap, and he said, like, as a perfect squad, you want close to about 18 very good first team footballers that can push for starting places. And outside of that, a couple of top young players that can fill in on the bench every now and then. Wolves, on paper, do have about 18 very good first team footballers. But unfortunately, for one reason or another, you know, injuries have got the better of us. But like you just said, Matt, it's pretty much common knowledge that Sasha is, you know, always injured. Hwang's always injured. Neto's always injured. So, you know, you're always going to lose that level, you know, level of availability.
I think also, sorry, George, none of us have got any sports science qualifications, but from watching football, and especially the last couple of years where there's more games, the games are longer, you know that when you're playing towards the last third of the season, that you're going to have injuries. Like, every single club is the same. So we know it's coming. I mean, it's probably unfortunate that it's happened to like four of your forwards, but even so, it's we knew we needed one.
Yeah, and I think I was going to say, to go back a little bit, to play devil's advocate, I know, Dave, you mentioned there that Gary O'Neill won't get any of the blame. And, you know, my thoughts on Gary O'Neill has been superb, been a revelation for us. I actually think he does get a bit of blame for Saturday, personally, from when we went 2-1 up, because his comments afterwards around, well, I've made these changes and I couldn't do anything with the shape because I'd made all these changes and I couldn't do anything about it. I checked it yesterday because I thought the comment didn't really resonate with me because I thought, I'm sure he had subs left. He still had like one
Boomer.
Well, he had two subs he could have used, but in one window, if that makes sense. He had Boubacar Traoré on there. All he had to do was take off Sarabia. I don't even mind if you take the young lad off who you brought on and put Boubacar Traoré on. Just do something. Like, I know he's probably thinking, well, I can't take Aitnery off because if we go to extra time, we're fucked. If I can't take Sarabia off, extra time, fucked, like a penalty taker. But the game at that point didn't need that. You've got to back yourselves just to see the game out. And it was so naive the way we went about it. And I don't care if you've got youngsters on the pitch or you have a team full of 35-year-old veterans. You can't do that. You can't do that. We deserve to get fuck all out of the game. Coventry deserve to go through. I've got no problems with that. But you can't concede two goals when you're 2-1 up in the 96th minute, especially with what's on the line for the game. You know, 3 minutes from Wembley and you can see two goals like that. It's I think Gary O'Neill needs to take a little bit, unfortunately, for me personally. I think he has got to take some blame for the weekend.
I wholeheartedly agree. And I think he made himself look a bit of an idiot with the post-match press conference as well, bringing up the Mark Robbins thing. Like, if Mark Robbins has apologised and he's even said himself, look, I shouldn't have done it. We've all done stuff in the heat at the moment. Like,
especially if the kid was winding him up during the game.
Yeah, exactly. If you're at an away game and you go 1-0 down, some little twat's giving you loads. If you're 2-1 up, you know you're going, yeah, you know you're going to think exactly the same. Like, and it's of course, like, when you take yourself out of it and you calm down, it's probably not the right thing to do. But he's apologised, but then to make it about that, I just think
it's to deflect it away.
It's distraction.
It's quite obvious of a deflection that everyone knows what he's doing. It's like, it's just counterproductive. I just felt he didn't cover himself in glory. Again, he's probably a bit irate, but I just cannot believe the spewed that lead in that fashion. But I felt as soon as it went 2-2, there's only one way it was going. You just saw Wolves like, oh God, they shit the bed.
I didn't think we'd have thrown it away completely. I thought it'd go to extra time. And like I said earlier, I think at that point we would have had a little bit more about us to, you know, see it out and, you know, either go and get the win in extra time or whatever. But it was almost that third goal, their third goal to make it 3-2. For me, it looked like a carbon copy of the United goal. Exactly the same thing.
It was.
We get ourselves back in the game and then throw it away. And even the whole mannerism of the goal, the finish, the positions of the players, like Kilman, just like the body position and everything. It was frustrating. That, again, the roar from the Coventry fans, like, unbelievable. And imagine if it was roles reversed, you would have lost your head. But ultimately, at that point, like you said earlier, George, you know, you got over it. It affected me for about half an hour when I was traveling home. After that, you got to think, we didn't deserve to win the game anyway, so you can't be that pissed off about it. I think a lot of people, you know, for us, this was, I know some big teams left in it. It was a great chance to possibly win the trophy. And literally, we got given on a plate, no disrespect to Coventry, the best chance to get through to the semi-final. And, you know, we threw it away.
If you don't beat Coventry in a quarter-final, all due respect to Coventry, you don't deserve to win the competition.
No.
But we've had one hard tie against Brighton, in my opinion. The rest of it. Win.
I mean, I think if you got it now, to be fair, I think we've had a tough journey. To be fair, you got given two Premier League teams and a fierce rival who you can't fucking beat the toffee. I think we had a tough run, but ultimately, they probably on paper, the easiest game out of the four, we bottle it in.
Yeah, it's a massive result for West Brom at the weekend, though, with Coventry beating Wolves. my phone was blowing up with Albion fans. I'm like, I want me something here. Look, something happened.
My mate messaged me because he's getting married and we're going to a stag do abroad, but he's having a UK stag do that weekend. And someone said, the weekend they picked was the semi-final weekend. And this other Wolves fan put, you do realise that's FA Cup semi-final weekend. I said, well, they wouldn't know because they're Albion fans. Full-time whistle goes, look forward to seeing you on the 20th, lads.
That's
how
fucking
shove
up your arse.
The videos, though, doing the rounds are just embarrassing, aren't they? But...
Oh, yeah, embarrassing, mate. So that's them summed up there, ain't it? But I was still, like, in shock at the way that that we performed and chucked it away. Does it? We'll talk about the handball goal in a bit, the dubious first goal. But Dave, does it concern you a little bit in the manner how flat it is that it is season over? Like I said, it was the Leeds game the last two seasons that weekend where everything fell apart.
Yeah, I think we're not going to know. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that we've got Villa as our next game. I don't think we're going to know until a week on Saturday, really, because is it a good thing or a bad thing that this defeat has come at this time and you're going straight into an international break? Obviously, it's going to give Gary O'Neill time to reflect on it and work on it, but ultimately it's going to sit on the players' minds for a long, long time. It looked like some of them were really upset at the final whistle as well. So, it's going to take a monumental effort for us to qualify for Europe with the injuries that we've got going on at the moment. So, I don't know. Villa's an interesting one. I think if you can go to Villa and beat them, all of a sudden, I think momentum's high again. Everyone's up for it again. I'm thinking, come on, then let's give this a go. But if you go there and it's a ball draw or you end up losing that game, I think there'll be a lot of concern again. But yeah, I think it's similar to what you said. Was it Leeds under Lopetegui? Leeds under Bruno Lage as well?
Lage.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, it does stink of that a little bit.
I remember Tim Spears talking on the podcast probably about a couple of months ago now, and he said he still feels that Gary O'Neill is like four defeats away from fans like turning on him. Do you think that could, like, say we have a run like that next? Do you think that could be the case? Do you think it could be a case of Gary O'Neill just being another Wolves manager? Or do you think he's still got, like, the credit in the back? This is hypothetical, by the way. It's not me saying I'm calling for...
I think situation dictates that. And the situation and the hand he got dealt at the start of the season was obviously a bad one. He obviously took the job on that basis. He could lose every game for me until the end of the season, and I still think he's performed above his level, above what we expected for the season by keeping us in the Premier League. I think the season, I sort of echo what you're saying about the season being over. The season, I don't think technically is over. However, if we lose to Villa, it will be, because...
Yeah.
For us to get into these European spots, which again I don't think we will. I'm saying that now, as of the 18th of March, I don't think we will. We've probably got to win four out of the next five, because the last four we've got City, Liverpool, and Arsenal. If they're all going for the title, well, I fear that our season is over going into them games, because all three of those could absolutely fucking steamroll us. And we seen it last year where we lost. Was it six at the Emirates near the end of the season? That we sort of just folded. Like, you don't want to be involved in them sort of games if the season's over. I hope we've got something still to play for. But yeah, I mean, I understand what Tim's saying on that podcast, but for me, we're not going down, are we? Like, I don't. If we lost every game of the season now, we're going to come 15th, aren't we? And for me, still, that's, well, I said 17th, I think, at the start of the year. So
Any manager in world football, if you lost four or five on the bounce, people will start to turn on you regardless. I mean, if Pep or Klopp lost the next five.
Pep or Klopp.
Yeah, but even if they lost the next five, there'll be a certain portion of that fan base like thinking, flipping heck, like, or, you know. But I think with us, depends. I agree with what George says. You know, he's done a stellar job so far. And I think on the balance of things, if you lost four or five of these next games across the season, when you average it out, he's still done a good job. But at the same time, that was the issue with Bruno Lage, where he had such an immaculate season up until around the end of Jan, Feb, and then the form just fell off a cliff.
He should have been sacked at the end of the season,
He couldn't get the morale and couldn't get the momentum back. So that's your issue. And then you bring up those games there, George, is like, you don't want to be going into the season with fans going, geez, thank fuck that's over. Like, you want something to still be excited about. And at the moment with the injuries and stuff, you know. I had someone message me saying, I just hope we doesn't become one of these, you know, the next few years where we're just going to be, oh, yeah, okay. Which has been the last few years.
But I think there is that danger of that, right? Because realistically, I know the FFP rules are changing next year, where I think it's a certain percentage of your group annual revenue that you can spend. So it's like, that's all well and good because our revenue will be substantial being a Premier League side. But if Fosen don't want to invest that sort of money, we're in trouble because no doubt next year, Newcastle will open the purse strings, your Villas will go again, all these clubs will start spending. And you can get a bit stagnant and stale in the Premier League. And I just think if you stand still for a season, it happened with Leicester, it happened with Southampton. You do end up just getting swallowed up. You do get swallowed up at some point. So I know what you're saying though, like, because I've had a few Albion mates say to me, like, oh, it's a bit boring, isn't it, being in the Premier League where you just come in like mid-table, 11, 12.
It's crap.
It is crap because like your season D's over with track the cup competitions, but I don't know. I just hope that it doesn't peter out because like I say, that last month of the season, if the season's over and we're going into those games, I could tell you now that we're gonna get pumped three of the four games minimum.
Yeah. I think it'll be a real test of Gary O'Neill's ability to get them going again and motivating them, because if it's took the stuffing out of us, it's going to take the stuffing out of them. For me, Villa's a bit, look, we're thin up top, but Villa's the perfect game for them to show the fans a reaction. So you get to Villa Park and get a result, all's forgotten really, isn't it? Like, so, but it'll be interesting if they spew it there and chuck the towel in, then I won't be very impressed at all. But yeah, I think still, yeah. I'm a bit speechless, to be honest. I can't believe like, what's happened. Yeah. I don't think I've really processed what's happened.
I think you've got to be cautious that we don't get a bit too doom and gloom, because you know, other than this game, the season has been very decent, very successful so far. There's a small chance that we can still make, you know, create something special, but it's a stretch at the moment. And I think, I don't know, I that Villa game is big now. That is, you know, I don't know, it's the next game. So Gary O'Neill will be happy with that because that's all he talks about. You know, we only focus on the next game and that's what we've got as fans. That's all we can do as well, really. But I don't go into that game with much faith because on paper, other than maybe Cunha being ready, that's the lineup that we just saw is going to be the same lineup again next weekend.
That's what I mean. Like you say, it's not too doom and gloom, but after that result, no, and knowing that it's probably only going to be Cunha back, it's hard to feel like positive about it, isn't it? And I know people will come in the comments, who are probably of an older generation, and say, you know, be careful what you wish for. You know, I'd kill to be 11th, 12th in the Premier League every season. I was there in League One. But I think football's more than, like, perspective. Like, you've got to want to do better. You've got to want to win things. So that's how. And I know you can't win everything, but I don't want to be thankful that we're in the Premier League every season. I want to be thankful that we're pushing for something. Because we have two or three seasons where we're 13th, 15th, 16th, that season ticket waiting list going down, you'll be able to get one. Because people will just be, if there's no investment, you spend what you bring in, people will just think, oh, I can't be arsed for this. I felt like it this season. I mean, we've done all right.
They've got to get, it's been frustrating because the last, I don't know, this has just turned into a general chat about the Wolves, which, you know, is fine, but I think we just sort of diverted away from the commentary game completely. It's sort of off script, but the whole The issue for Wolves is that ever since Nuno's gone, every season has been a transitional season. Like when Bruno Lage came in, it's like, right, transitional season. Second season under Lage, he was changing formation and shape, transitional season. He fucks it up. Lopetegui comes in, he fucks off. Then Gary O'Neill comes in, no money, transitional season. So next summer, you'd hope if Gary O'Neill's still around, that's the first season where you'd hope Wolves can start to build a little bit more. You've got a proper, you know, players will go, new players will come in. It hopefully it'll be a new Wolves, really, and such. And this is the first proper opportunity as a sporting director Matt Hobbs is going to have, with all being well, a little pot of money to say, right, this is the players and the profiles that I want to bring in. And next season, I think that's when we can really, you know, judge and get, fingers crossed, get excited about the Wolves team again, because it'll be something new to talk about. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what's boring, that every season we're going into it transitional. Give him time. We've got no money. Just stick with what we got. We need something to get excited about. And the fact that Gary O'Neill's got this current crop of players scoring goals that three other managers couldn't get. Yeah. You know, if he can actually add a proper goal scorer or a proper striker, we could be laughing next year.
I think that they've got to back him. I think they've shown that Gary O'Neill has given us like so much like hope and enjoyment from like a crumb, really, hasn't it? Because at the start of this season, I know that I said we'd stop up, but I just thought it'd be again another finish 15th, 16th season, and we've exceeded that so far.
Yeah,
but I think I still think there's reasons to be positive, but you just don't know. I feel like you've had the stuffing taken out of you with the Covent result, then knowing that you're still in the running for Europe, but you've got seven senior players, it's like, and it's all so avoidable as well.
Yeah, of course it is, yeah. I think, again, another kick in the teeth, really, is that hypothetically would have got Man United as well. And you're thinking, as long as you avoid City, are the fans just against Chelsea and United? And I know United have beat us twice this season, but we know both those games have gone right. I think it's just so frustrating, really. And we've been, yeah, the good day at Wembley has been taken away from us, and we might not get a chance like that for, you know, it all, you've got to get lucky in the cup, haven't you, with draws and whatever, and we might not get lucky for the next couple of years. We might end up running into Liverpool or Man City like we normally do with Liverpool anyway, but this was the chance to get into to another semi-final.
This was the banker. I feel like we've been really negative. Any positives from the weekend? Ryan Aitnori, what a player. Ran the show really for us. Jose Sarr was good as well. It probably could have been 5 or 6 if it weren't for him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, really. I've seen people say that they thought Breno had a bad game, and again, I thought Breno was fine, to be honest with you.
Well, for you, meant Hugo. I was going to say
Santi Breno. Sorry, I thought he was all right. I know you say that when Ellison scored 2, but I don't think he was at fault for the goals.
Personally,
I thought he was all right. My thoughts on Kilman have been documented over the years, and I think he's been good this season. I think he had one of his worst games in a Wolves shirt, personally.
He's been fantastic this season, but he does worry me a little bit in like times of adversity. I feel like he panics a little bit.
Well, that's when you've got your backs against the wall, that's where your leaders, and I'll do that inverted commas thing for the listeners, leaders should stand up. But I don't think he shirks it, but I think he shrinks. I don't think he's like, you know, he didn't put it on his, you know, he didn't snot it, does he? He didn't like put his body everywhere when we got a back up against the wall, in my opinion, anyway.
But in fairness, I don't think anyone did on Saturday.
Nah, so. I mean, for that equaliser, I mean, I remember watching it live and thinking it was far too easy, and watching it back, so bad, isn't it? Even because we lost the ball very cheaply, didn't we? Just in our half.
Yeah.
And then Lamina and Gomez were goosed, I think, couldn't get back. And then Semedo as well. Like, it was just a very leggy, hunger leg out there, didn't it? It was just too easy. It was just so easy. It was crap.
It was a leggy performance, though, but I mean, they've had a week off. But like when we had opportunities to break, they'd like sit on the ball. Now perhaps that's a tactical thing of, we don't want to be drawn into a game here that's end to end. We just want to sit and contain and control the game. Perhaps it's that. But I don't know how you can be leggy after a week off. Like, I know there's a lot of games, but...
Well, we didn't... Honestly, if you had to say who the Premier League side was on the weekend, you'd think it was Coventry City, wouldn't you?
Oh, class one. They were excellent.
And he's a good boss, isn't he? Like, I know, again, it's very easy to say that after it's been put in front of your face, but he's been doing a very good job there for a very long time, hasn't he? And yeah, he will, I think, if they don't go up this season, I wouldn't be shocked if a Premier League team took a punt on him, even like a Palace. You know, I think they could do a lot worse than someone like Mark Robins.
I think any team that lets Ellis Sims score twice against them deserves to lose. He's had a purple patch recently, but my God, at the start of the season, he's absolute crap.
No, that miss was bad as well, wasn't it? The first half.
He's going wide. Like, it's not even like, even if Sars was there, he's going to miss it. He scores twice against us, so
yeah.
A day to forget. Hopefully it's not one of those days that we look back and think of as the turning point for a downward spiral. But to be fair, it's not the characteristics of a war side this season. When the going's got tough, these players seem to get going and just keep fighting. So hopefully it's just a one off, because it's not a lot been like that all season. Questions, boys? Do you want a few questions? A lot of them are quite, we've been keeping the podcast quite depressing. I mean, Josh has said, still only question I have, 96 minutes, 2-1 up on Lost. How? David has asked, can't believe Gaz didn't bring on Booby on after we went 2-1 up and just let him chase everything for 10 minutes or so. There's only 3 minutes left, weren't there?
Yeah, even at 2-1, you bring him on. I see out the game. I think.
He's not featured a lot, has he? Really? I know he come back from an injury, but he's not featured an awful lot.
I said last summer, I wouldn't be surprised if he got sold, and people are like, "What are you on about?" And I just had a feeling that, because even Lopetegui wasn't a huge fan of him. So I don't know. From the limited time we've seen him, he's always been okay. But hey. Barely had a kick, has he, this year? I can't remember the last time I've seen him on the pitch.
I remember him coming on against Man City and being good for about 15 minutes at the end. I thought he played really well then. But again, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
Thing is, though, again, like where we're in the position we're at, where he doesn't improve. He's not an improvement on Gomez or Lamina, is he? So...
He's from the bad I played Saturday, for sure. I think we both
are. Yeah, of course. Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. But I mean, they obviously don't fancy him, do they? So we might as well sell him and bring in the profile of player that O'Neill does want.
Yeah. The Lamina left wing thing, I'm so shocked it lasted as long as it did. I don't understand why you didn't even like drop him more central and allow, like, you know, Tommy Doyle or whoever to stay central, get a bit higher up the pitch. He just like isolated on the left wing, offered absolutely nothing.
Would have been better off just playing Hugo Breno or Doherty. I didn't get as well, I know again it's turned into depression. Like when they brought Doherty on,
they played him higher up than Ryan Aitnori.
Yeah, why did they push Aitnori back?
Probably for an outlet, I'd imagine.
But Aitnori was the only outlet though, wasn't he?
No, I mean, try and win.
You know, Doherty would have been a better centre forward than Fraser on the weekend.
I know we've talked about it, but I feel like.
What did you think of Tuomi when he came on?
I mean, again, I've seen like a lot of people saying he looked great. For me, he looked bright. He could get around the pitch a bit better than Fraser, but he gave the ball away for the second goal. He won a 50-50 in the middle of the pitch, which everyone.
He started the move for the first goal, I think.
Yeah.
One of the two. He played a really nice pass out wide.
Look, I think he was okay, but again, like, I think he can, really, you know, when it's like, yeah, comparing who do you want to start, I'd rather none of them started. I'd rather we played someone who's ready right now, if I'm honest.
Michael Di Bernardo has asked, is European football at the moment a good idea considering the size of the squad? That is a good point. No, like with the size of the squad we've got now, can you go Thursday, Sunday? We can't do Sunday at the minute.
We had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, though, didn't we? I'm sure.
You have to invest if you go into Europe, don't you?
Yeah, but at the same time, that's like getting into the playoffs and saying, "Nah, we ain't ready for the Prem. We don't want to win it." Like, if you go into, if you qualify for Europe, you're good enough to, you know,
yeah,
the reason. And I think we said they're going to invest regardless. You've got to be fairly confident they would invest. You've got some half decent players that would come back off loan spells, i.e., Mosquera, Chiquinho, who would be good squad options, who would all be welcome now at the moment, to be honest, especially someone like Chiquinho. I don't think it'd be the worst idea.
I think it's coming, Michael's probably coming more from the viewpoint of, do you think the club are ready to invest if we do get into Europe? Because we will have to.
Well, the thing is, though, now, Fosen's rhetoric of FFP being the problem is removed from next year, right? It's 75% of the revenue. So, in theory, again, I'm not quite sure on Wolves' revenue numbers, but let's just say it's 300 million quid. I don't know. I should have looked before. They can then spend, you know, about 225, 230 million pounds.
Yeah, but it's got to come from somewhere, hasn't it? And it's...
that's what I'm saying. Fosen as a business on paper are very, very rich, but are they cash rich? They're very like asset rich, yeah, but have they got liquidity to put into a football club? Probably not.
And it's also easy telling people how to spend, spending other people's money as well.
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, it's their business, right?
He's got to spend, but I think, you know what's going to happen next season as well? The season ticket prices will be going up.
Well, surely. You think?
I think they will. Yeah, there's still a massive waiting list. They don't care if people drop out.
It's got.
It'll go up. I reckon it'll go up by
5%.
I'm going to say now 8%.
I think there'll be fucking major clangor if it goes up again next summer.
It'll go up and people will moan about it for a couple of weeks
and then pay it.
It's the same every year. I mean, thankfully I'm in a financial position where I am still able to afford it. But I mean, how much is a season ticket now? 600 and something?
Depends where you're sitting, doesn't it? About 670,
yeah,
670,
right.
Wouldn't it, I think, in the South Bank.
Go to about 70 quid.
If it starts creeping over like 800, 900, I think I would consider like, do I really want to do this when I can watch it on the box for free?
Mm.
I genuinely would. Because it's not worth it. But I don't think. Especially like Steve Ball upper, when you're in a stand that's falling down. If you start seeing some investment on the pitch, then yeah, why not? You increase it to whatever you want, but
We said that last summer. I was like, yeah, well, pay the money. It's all right. They'll pay. They'll back it when they never did. But it'll be interesting because it'll be the first season for a while without Vinnie Clark as well. And he was very, and for the fans, and a lot of things got fucking shot up in price under him. So,
but isn't he still associated with the club?
Yeah,
it's like a third party that's still.
But he's not directly included in Wolves. What's saying that? Would he? Yeah, he would.
He's not a Wolves employee now, is he?
No, he just works for.
They're still part of the group somehow.
It depends. Well, he's gone to Levy, hasn't he? But it depends on what he's looking after there, and I know the catering's Levy at Wolves. I don't know if any of the merchandising is. I know we're probably going to be coming away from Castor, so perhaps. So you don't know, do you?
No. Again, interesting that he's gone and they cut off the store straight away. I don't know if it's a coincidence or that was his baby. I don't know.
Yeah. You'd be pleased to know a Mars Music show has asked a question. He said, if no substantial bid comes in for Neto this summer due to injury, who from our squad is most likely to be sold to generate funds? I'd much rather sell Neto than the likes of Aitnori and Gomez. If you'd have asked me, like, 3 or 4 weeks ago about Neto, I'd be like, no, I'd love to keep him. But I don't know, he's missed, as you said on the last podcast, Dave, he's missed, how much was it, like a year and a half out of the four or five years he's been here through injury?
Something mad, yeah.
Something mad like that. So, I mean, I won't be adverse to getting rid of him for the right fee. I think he'd be out in Ori personally.
Or I think he'd have the most. Maybe Kilman. I think Aitnori would have the most suitors. Kilman always will have that bit of value because he's got experience and English.
Cunha will probably be adored by a lot of clubs around Europe, but the fact that we paid £45 million for him means that...
Wars would want at least 55, 60 million, and that would be... Again, I could see him, you know, he could play for like a City or Liverpool or something, and then may well pay that money, but... Yeah. Is it worth like your 5 or 10 million profit or whatever?
So then go and find I think he's quite unique in the terms of attributes he has.
Yeah, I wouldn't sell Cunha at all. I just think we've got to get rid of Neto.
Hwang has a great first half of the season, plotted by injuries, doesn't look the same player, so I don't think he's one. Joe Gomez.
I think Joao Gomez you could, but again, you need him to have a... I think between now and the end of the season, have a solid end of the season. I think you could command close to 50 million for him if he's very, very good.
Who?
Joao Gomez.
Oh, I thought you said Hwang.
No, I was going to say about Hwang. The issue with Hwang is I think you'll definitely make a profit on what you're buying for, but because of the market ability of him, it's just one of them. I know that shouldn't be whether you keep or sell a, you know, keep or sell a player, but... Again, I would, as good as Hwang and as good as Neto have been this season, I'd rather get someone that's close to their quality but available for, you know, every game of the season. Yeah. Because regardless, on Saturday, if you had a player that was a good Premier League winger, well, you would have won that game.
Even like a Bellegarde for me makes a difference.
I think we would have won that game with Bellegarde on Saturday.
Yeah, we would have, yeah. We just needed someone to send them the other way, a bit of pace behind. Yeah, that's all we needed.
Next question, Jake Gallagher says, how do you feel about Big Gaz purposely getting suspended to watch the Masters whilst at Middlesbrough, plus looking back an interview 24 hours? This was from Rob Palmer, wasn't it? He was a journalist who was moaning about Gary O'Neill calling for respect in the post-match press conference. He put a link up to say that Gary O'Neill admitted about getting a yellow card so he could watch the Masters. And then also, is he apparently the only ever player who didn't want to do the interview because he couldn't be bothered?
No, they all do it.
So you see that he said, oh, yeah, he made a camera crew come 6-hour round trip. Is it his fault that they live 6 hours away? Like, he probably ain't going to know that, is he?
He should just do the interview. But then, like, I tweeted this, Rob, and said, have you got more details on this? Like, when was it? How did it come about? So, no reply.
Yeah, to be fair, though, it's one side of the story. It could just be this Rob guy being assaulted.
It is a weird thing to buy. Like, why would you even bring it up? Who's asked?
Yeah, why would you even bring it up? Yeah.
That's like, you know, bringing something up for like 6 or 7 years ago when he was a player as well. So.
And also, if you're travelling 6 hours for an interview with Gary O'Neill, then, I mean, I wouldn't. As a player, you get... Yeah, well, you know, we've had a good season. Fans have been great this season. You know, we're trying to finish as high as we can. Like, do you need to travel 6 hours for that?
Nah, get them on Zoom.
Yeah. So, apparently that's what I don't know about the yellow card and the Masters. It seems pretty unprofessional, but we've all done stuff at work that is unprofessional.
Neymar has never not missed his sister's birthday since the start of his career, has he?
I think it's time for the career path game to try and claw back a bit of positivity from this rather gloomy podcast. It's a shame, really, because there's not going to be a podcast next week because there's no game, but it feels like we're going to have to end it on a bit of a somber one. But anyhow, last one was a good one. I know a lot of people in the comments saying about Jason Shackle saying, how did you guys not get it? Got to do better this week.
It's just what it's difficult sitting in the hot seat. That's all I'll say.
It is. Just to recap on the score, so Davey's top with 31. Finn is at the bottom with 3. George, 20. So I don't know what the prize is for the winner. We'll figure some out. We can't do a forfeit for the loser because if it's George, he won't do it and Finn's only played 2 games.
load of rubbish.
Where's your TikTok dance? Where's your TikTok dance? Where's your TikTok dance?
The account is banned, I've been told.
It's back. United are back, baby. Signed a contract.
I didn't realise it was back, so there you go.
It's not, he's just winding up.
Yeah, I know, it isn't.
there's a TikTok trend at the minute, Jordan, where people get the cores out and windmill.
Matt's is quite good, actually. You have to save it and zoom in to see it.
Oh, fantastic. Right, you ready for your first one?
Let's go.
Yeah.
Your first player started his career at Hertha at BSC in 2000, scoring 0 goals in 87, before moving to West Bromwich Albion in 2004, scoring 0 in 31. During his time at West Brom, he moved on loan to Manchester United.
Thomas Kuszak.
Thomas Kuszak, holding our goal. 1-0. Who goes on loan from Albion to Man United?
Weird.
Shout that was.
You ready for your next one?
Yep.
Your second player started his career at Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2006, where he scored 0 goals in 3 appearances during 06 to 09. During his time at Wolves, he moved on loan to Stockport County in 06, scoring 2 in 14. In 08, to Hereford United.
Lewis Coburn?
It's not Lewis Coburn. 0 in 4. 2008, loan Stockport County, 0 in 6. And then another loan Stockport County, 08-09, scoring 2 in 21. Must have made quite the impact at Stockport from 3 times in 3 seasons. Before moving on loan to Milton Keynes Dons in 2009, scoring 0 in 5. He then moved to MK Dons on a permanent basis in 2009, scoring 16 in 169. Before moving to Birmingham City in 2014, scoring 6 in 117. Before then, moving to Ipswich Town in 2018, scoring 0 in 10. He then moved to Aberdeen in 2018, scoring 0 in 16. Before moving to Solihull Moors in 2020, scoring 1 in 21. And in 2021, moved to Hemel Hempstead Town, scoring 0 in 5. And he's now at Hitchin Town, where he moved in 2021, scoring 0 in 53.
Blues, team switch. Oh, man.
Dave, I'm going to give you 30 seconds for you to give me an answer. I think that's fair enough.
Again, I think there's going to be people screaming. Do you know it, Jim?
Don't think. I might need to. When you said I know it, I just switched off a little bit. So then I probably need seconds, to. Dave. Can you go for the get out the appearances, Matt? And then once this is.
I think I've.
Your time's up.
Keith Andrews. It's not him.
It's not Keith Andrews. It's not. Would you rather me go through the career again, or would you rather me tell you his nationality?
I mean, I could do the career again because I did switch off when Dave said I've got it. To be honest, but I remember Wolves, Stockport. Was it Stockport?
Wolves, Stockport, Hereford, Stockport, MK Dons, Birmingham City, Ipswich Town, Aberdeen, Solihull, Hemel Hempstead, Hitchin Town.
And he made his most appearances for Birmingham City, was it, as well?
MK Dons. 169.
Well, I'm going to keep myself. I've got a feeling how it is.
I'm going to move on to the international career. So between 07 and 2017, he scored 1 goal in 4 appearances for the Republic of Ireland.
Oh, Stephen Gleeson.
It's 1-1.
I was thinking Sammy Klingon then.
Yeah.
This one's going to be a tough one, but I think Dave might get it. The third player started his career at Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2009, where he scored 0 goals in 2 appearances. Whilst at Wolves, he moved on loan to Cheltenham Town in 2009, scoring 0 in 1. Then Torquay in 2010, scoring 0 in 9. Then in 2011, Plymouth Argyle scoring 2 in 23.
John Flatt?
Scoring 2 in 23.
I was literally going for a guess then. And then as soon as he said 2 in 23, I was like, fuck's sake, I've already said it.
Is he doing anything at the minute? You've got a club or?
You know what? He sat next to me at one of the games recently.
He's a coach of the Wolves now. He's a coach.
Yeah, he's a community youth coach, yeah. But yeah, obviously he ain't scored fucking goals, but carry on.
2012, he moved to Warsaw, scoring 3 in 56, where he also moved on loan to Burton. 2014, scoring 0-5. He then moved permanently to Dagenham Redbridge in 2014, scoring 9-80. Then to Mansfield Town in 2016, scoring 0-16. 2017, Boston United, scoring 16-41. In 2018, Salford City didn't make an appearance, so therefore didn't score. 2018, scored 3-27 for Fylde. And then had two loan spells at Altrincham in 2018 and 2019, scoring 3-12. And he's now currently still playing in 2019 from 2019. Kidderminster Harriers, where he scored 42-149.
Ashley Hemmings.
Hemmings. Give it away, yeah. That last bit.
Bosher.
Get it. I was going to say Zeli Ishmael. It threw me a little bit.
Your fourth player started his career in 1993 at Beauvoir, scoring 0-79. In 1996, had a loan move to Troyes, scoring 0-13. Before 1997, moving to Le Havre, scoring 0-16. 1998, scored at Lille, scoring 2-34. And then another loan spell at Lille in 1999, scoring 0-9. He then moved to Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2000.
Ludo Polo?
It's not Ludovic Polo. Scoring 0-45 before moving to Burnley in 2003, scoring 0-90. He then moved to
Mo Kamara. Yeah.
Go on, Mo. He had a run on speed. It was good. Quite quick. And he scored. And he scored two goals. I'm surprised at that.
Mate, he was like modern day. Like, well, I say modern day. He was like a Adama Traore. All pace, nothing else. But also a very, very nice guy.
Smiles a lot, then he loves it.
Still got his bar, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's also got a podcast on our channel if you want to watch it. Mo Kamara special. Back in the day.
Cool. Your fifth player started his career at Wolverhampton Wanderers in 1995, scoring 19-154. He had a loan spell at Shrewsbury Town in 96, scoring 0-4, before moving to Portsmouth permanently in 2002, scoring 0-16. He had a loan spell at Sheffield Wednesday in 2003, scoring 1-4. The same year at Walsall, 1-11. Same year at Rotherham United, 0-14. 2004, he moved to Sheffield United on loan, scoring 0-5. In 2004, he had a loan spell at Sunderland, scoring 1-7. He made the loan move a permanent one in 2004, scoring 4-45. And had a loan spell at Norwich City in 2005, scoring 0-7. And then moved to Norwich City permanently in 2006, scoring 2-42. Before moving to Toronto FC in 2007, scoring 3-74. Before finishing his career in 2010 at New York Red Bull, scoring 1-12.
Oh, I should know this. Who did he leave Wolves to join, Matt? On permanently.
Permanently.
I'm going to say, did you say Toronto?
Yeah.
Carl Robinson.
Shout.
Carl Robinson. Well played.
I think he managed them, didn't he, as well?
Yeah. He's good manager. Yeah.
It was. Hey, if you want to update the scores.
Yeah, we'll do.
Fantastic. That's all we've got time for this week. No podcast next week because there's no game. Sorry, it's been a bit of a depressing one. Tried to keep it upbeat, but it's been nigh impossible. But I've enjoyed it nonetheless. Dave, where can people find you? Should they wish to follow you, mate?
Dave has a party on Instagram and Twitter and probably your local A&E ward.
George, where can people find you?
So at George7 on Twitter and Instagram.
Wonderful. We are talking Wolves across all social media platforms. Let us know how you got on in career path game in the comments down below if you're listening or watching on YouTube. But yeah, until next time, try and keep positive. Still a lot to play for. And hopefully we'll be back in a couple of weeks to preview the Villa game. Wonderful. See you later, lads. All the listeners, take care and look after yourselves.
Peace.